Cheers, Brendan.
I need your clothes, your boots, and your motorcycle, Alan.
Episode 150 of the Not a Thing podcast. We made it, everybody.
Woohoo!
There was a hiccup earlier in the week. We were going to record on our traditional, although not recently so traditional, day of Tuesday. But it's Thursday. We still made it. Still counts as weekly for the people that measure those things at iTunes. Are there people that measure those things?
There's no people at iTunes. It's all robots. And I don't know if I'd call it a hiccup so much as a hangover, but
there might have been hiccups on the way to that hangover. Isn't that, they usually, at least in TV or cartoons, like old-timey cartoons, whenever they show the drunk, they're always like hiccuping. I don't think I've ever gotten the hiccups when I'm drunk.
No, I'm not an old-timey cartoon, Alan. I was just hungover. I drink in the 21st century.
Well, I'm glad you made it. I'm glad that we're able to get our 150th episode out there. Thanks to all our supporters, all our fans, all our listeners, all the people that tweet at us, to us, with us, the Facebook, maybe even Google Plus.
And maybe. Mostly us, because we make the show and put it out there. So
yes,
thanks
Brendan.
To you, Alan.
Keen. Well, we're looking at a bunch of stuff today. We kind of talked about how it's all robots at iTunes, but at least those robots don't have guns, because there was an open letter penned this last week, and signed by a bunch of people, including Stephen Hawking and Elon Musk, the person that was at IBM who was in charge of programming the Watson AI. And the whole thing is about, let's make autonomous weapons illegal, which I think we at the Not a Thing podcast think is a thing.
It not
that
being
they
a
should
thing
be illegal
is a thing. Yes.
Right. That they should be illegal is the thing.
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty cut and dry. I mean, the letter has a bunch of stuff about how the slippery slope of AI, and how fast and how quickly it can be deployed, and how it would turn into a global arms race. I mean, of computer intelligence, it, essentially inviting Judgment Day.
The Age of Ultron.
But not Judgment Day with nuclear weapons. Even just something as innocuous as a drone that can identify what people look like and shoot at them. I think over the course of the show, we've documented a lot of technologies kind of moving in that direction. So this is right in our wheelhouse, I think.
That, and the even larger threat of, what if this technology gets into the hands of paparazzi? AI paparazzi taking pictures of people all the time. I think that's the second concern. The first one, obviously, being Skynet. Because if you want Skynet, this is how you get Skynet.
Yeah, you really don't want like auto-sensing photographing robots. I'm pretty sure that's not a thing as well. But in the meantime, I urge you to sign this this open letter. It has 16,000 signatories and even more people endorsing it. I know I've signed it. It's up and on the internet. We'll link it, and hopefully it will go somewhere and do something and possibly stop Skynet before it starts.
What if we had never met in person and it turned out one of us was actually an AI?
Well, I mean, I could have been replaced by an AI many times over at this
point. That's true. I haven't seen you in like a month. If you're still human, blink twice.
Hey, Brendan.
I should just make a soundboard of myself and I just have a bot and you can podcast a bot.
If someone wants to make a soundboard of the Not a Thing podcast, that's 100% a thing. You have 150 episodes to go back and mine good quotes from. I was talking with someone about how, we're at 150 episodes. It's really cool. And they thought that we should do a greatest hits kind of thing where we go back and play favorite quotes and interviews and things like that. I'm like, no, that's too much work.
Yeah, that goes in the face of our lifestyle.
Way, way too much work. Not a thing. But if you're an enterprising listener and would like to make a soundboard for us, that's real cool. As long as you don't use your powers for evil. Some interesting hackers that I don't know if it was necessarily for evil, but they found ways to hack the computing and electronic systems of a Jeep, and hacking these things generally require you to be plugged into it and in connection to wires. I mean, that was the whole thing with Battlestar Galactica, right? If the newer version of Battlestar Galactica, if you're hardwired and you don't use the networks, it should be fine. Well, this is one of those things where if you have network access to a computer, it can probably be hacked. And in this case, this Jeep's computing systems, the onboard computers that control things like brakes and lights and all sorts of things, was compromised. And it was compromised in kind of spectacular fashion. It was written up in Wired magazine and it was a big enough deal that when the exploit was the exploit was shown, was demonstrated. I don't know if they necessarily shared how it worked to Jeep Chrysler, but Chrysler did recall like a significant number of vehicles just this week in response to this hack. And it's a real thing. I think it just goes to show that computers are hackable things. There's still a lot of technology and known exploits to things that unless it's a completely like homegrown system that doesn't require any off-the-shelf like operating systems or things like that, it's not going to be safe. And even if you do that, even if you do like a closed source, like behind closed doors kind of thing, it doesn't mean that no exploits are possible. You just don't know about them yet. And I think if a computer, I also think it's really kind of surprising how much that is controlled by computers in cars nowadays. I mean, they used to be very mechanical things, like you'd step on the brake, and that is the motion of you stepping on the brake is actually connected to a brake line that is hydraulic, and there's pressure. I realize that anti-lock brakes have all sorts of electronics in them, but having a centralized computer that is driving all of that seems like a single point of failure. If you can hack that computer, you can own that car. And that was shown to be true.
I need a new car. I don't know if I want a Jeep, though.
No. Yeah.
Especially now.
Yeah. Hopefully not too many people bought that Jeep. Well, we're going to move from hacking to a different kind of hacking. This is kind of more like monitoring, honestly. This is a paper that was written about behavioral profiling. And we've talked about this a little bit when we were talking about big data and patterns in big data, and how you can potentially identify people by different patterns of action. So the metadata will sell you out, even if the data is supposedly anonymized. And I remember talking about this with the Fitbit or other pedometer systems that are essentially ubiquitous now. They're in iOS 8 in the phones now. Anything that can measure your motion over a long enough time will find patterns, and you can use those patterns to identify a person, even if there's no name attached to that pattern or that data. A researcher figured out that there are enough patterns in how you type that you can actually extract out who's typing on a machine. So if you can see the speed that someone's typing, or and the patterns of how different letter combinations are done, it acts as a fingerprint. You might think that, how can that be compromised unless the computer is the thing doing the monitoring? In fact, you can do this with websites. It's if you've ever gone to Google or any other website that is a search engine that auto-completes, when you're typing, you haven't hit submit yet, but just the fact of typing in that window means that they can register all of that data, you know, how you're typing, what you're typing, things like that. So if you walked up to a public computer and started typing, your typing style could out you onto the internet, essentially. So that's not a thing. There's already
I think they would
Chrome
be able to track
plugin.
Me by all the mistypes.
Well, that counts too, right? If you consistently misspell something, or you always misspell something with in the same way, like you always type K instead of L when you're typing, things like that. I'm sure all of that contributes.
Backspace might be my most used button.
I always just, you know, close the browser window when I get frustrated. But there's already a Chrome plugin that anonymizes your typing. I think what it does is it grabs the typing that you do and then delays it by like a little bit of time in order to change all the spacing of the letters and stuff, which is kind of cool and ridiculous at the same time. So I think that's a hilarious kind of thing, right? It should be built into private browsing, so when you go into private browsing mode, it doesn't out you. It doesn't remember your browser history. It doesn't remember how you're typing, and you're just truly anonymous when you're surfing all that porn.
And it replaces the word cloud with butt.
I still had that plugin running. So this is a long time back. A fun thing from the Not a Thing podcast. If you look it up, I'm sure you could find it. You'll find it in episode, insert episode here.
Yes.
It was a Chrome script. I think it was a Grease Monkey script for Firefox as well. But what it would do is it would change every instance of the word cloud to butt. And if you ever say the cloud, it would change it to my butt. So we're going to upload all of these pictures into my butt, that kind of thing.
That still might be one of my favorite topics we've ever done. So we've done some very interesting things, some thought provoking things, but that I still always think of that one. I'm a man of simple pleasures.
So I still had that plugin on my computer as of like a month ago, And it's really, really funny because the company I work for has a number of products with cloud in the name. And and so I was giving a presentation. And I remember seeing it because I opened up the webpage to show like the graphics on it, and I was pointing at things, and I didn't I had forgotten that that plugin was there, but I did see it before, well, hopefully before anyone else did, and then I closed the window. So yeah, anyway, so let's move from the cloud to
or from the butt
to someone else's butt, potentially. So there's a story that we found that has a word that tickles. It tickles Brendan to no end. Actually, maybe I shouldn't say that. Maybe I shouldn't say that
which
thing. Does... So the word the word of the day for the Not a Thing podcast is teledildonics.
Teledildonics.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, so teledildonics. So it's exactly what you think. It's sex over the internet using computers and sex toys that are connected to the internet. And it seems like something that that's probably been around for a little while. I know that, you know, when... when Time Magazine did that big cyber sex expose that was really sensational in the like late 90s, there were things for this. But there are a number of companies that are currently doing it in 2015, and I believe six of them are being sued right now by a patent troll, which we already think is not a thing. We've talked about that in the past. Patent trolls are companies that buy up masses of patents, not because they're going to implement them, but because they're going to sue people for them, because the patents that were written like too broadly. Like one of the bigger ones that we talked about was a patent troll that was claiming that they had the rights to podcasting, and they were suing a bunch of podcasters to block it, and that has been kind of reworked. At least some of the things that were part of that that troll's platform have been kind of knocked out by thanks to the EFF and things like that. I'm not sure if the EFF is going to come to the rescue of teledildonics here, but
they
essentially
should.
the patent troll found a very, very broad patent, which is how they work, and they found one that essentially said the words sex toy and connected networks, existing connected networks. And by marrying those two things together, it allows sex toys to be controlled over the internet. There's a weird flowchart diagram that is included, and we'll link it in the show notes. But it has this flowchart of choosing the sex act. It's really hilarious. It's like anal, yes, no. Vaginal, yes, no. Penile, yes, no. And then if you follow no all the way through, it says invalid choice. You're done. You don't know how sex works. But like the patent troll that was blocking podcasting, the patent troll that's blocking teledildonics is not a thing. I think people want to get off via the internet, and the internet is a wild and wonderful place. And all of the tools and stuff that should be connected to it should be connected to it. It's really more of a fair use kind of thing. This really falls under the net neutrality kind of stuff, I think. I'm not the EFF or a lawyer, but if the EFF or a lawyer wants to look into this, it's a thing.
That patent troll can go fuck themselves, but not with an internet-controlled dildo.
Not over the internet. Well, hopefully, you know, even though you won't be making any noises because of teledildonics, maybe you'll be making noises because of the military's new noise gun. The military's developed a gun which shoots plasma. So plasma is that weird fourth state of matter that kind of exists in the sun and like anything very high energy. And what they're doing is they're concentrating high energy into a thing which shoots essentially balls of plasma that, as they rip through the air and disintegrate, they create ridiculously loud sound. And it's the kind of thing where they can direct it, so you can have directed fire of this plasma. And the plasma itself doesn't apparently, like, hurt you or burn or anything like that. It's just made to throw, like, very loud sounds around. And currently it's something at, like, 100 decibels. They want to shoot for, like, 120. That's, like, as loud as a jet engine. And they're able to throw this with some amount of accuracy, like 100 yards, I think, which is pretty significant.
Or they actually haven't gotten it to 100 yards yet. That's what they're working up to. So it's still pretty short range at this point.
Yeah.
But it's definitely something that shows promise.
Yeah. This is 100% a thing.
Laser-induced plasma effect. That sounds very sci-fi.
And awesome. And I would think non-lethal.
No. Well, yeah, it should be. It's from the Joint Non-Lethal Weapons Program.
Oh, good.
It's just, but you know, as really annoying and debilitating.
Right. I think it just sounds really cool. I totally want one. I mean, laser-induced plasma. Okay, like, check. Non-lethal force. Check. Very loud sounds that can be directed to about 100 yards. Check.
Yeah. It's like a metal gun.
They just need to, you know, have it play like songs. Like if the noise that it makes is like a song, you could throw songs like into the battlefield. That would be cool. But it would also be neat from a like concert perspective. Can you imagine that you're like listening to the concert and then they like are shooting sound at you for different kinds of things? You know, it's kind of like stereo, but it's directed. You can
go
like
see a show at the Plasma Dome.
I think this has non-military applications too. We could use it to throw our podcast wherever we want it.
Oh man, that would be so annoying.
100 yards away. Hello, Alan. That's a thing for sure.
When we get to that next 100 episode and add the intros, I don't think it's going to be as singular as it was before.
Yeah, I don't know who you're going to get to do that this year. I don't know if I told you how many hours that took.
Too many, it sounds like. Never mind. Too many.
More than zero.
I would say if it's more than one, it's not worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, I'll look into it. We'll see. If I were smart, I would have been doing them as we've been going, just kind of cutting and pasting them into the file as we go.
Maybe on the next 100.
Maybe. Maybe. We'll see. Well, we're moving from loud noises to loud noises caused by explosions. There was a very loud noise at a government building this last week. I didn't catch what government building it was. I feel like it was like the CDC.
It was the National Institute of Standards and Technology.
So NIST, the guys that they control, or not control, but they keep track of weights and measures. This is the group that has like the metal block that is the definition of a pound. It's the they also have things like the metal rod that is the definition of a foot, and it's like measured to the angstrom of because it's hydrogen atoms or I guess it's metal, so it's not hydrogen. I'm sure it's iron. But they actually counted out all the number of iron atoms to be exactly that distance. They also keep track of things like the time servers, the NTP time servers for the United States. But a security officer with spare time, apparently, blew up a lab. And they it was pretty spectacular, apparently. So it threw a blast shield, I think it was 35 feet.
Far.
And it had, there was, you know, damage inside, and they go in to figure out what was up with the lab or what caused the explosion. And they found like traces of what were precursors to meth. And so they're like, oh, well, maybe this is, they were doing something, there were some experiments, and then they found a recipe for meth. So, yeah. Clearly, government worker with a little too much time and a little too much access, and but apparently not enough internet, because probably could have avoided that.
he resigned with none of his dignity, but with burns over a lot of his body.
Yikes! Well, you know, apparently charges were not filed, at least as of when I saw that story earlier in the week. Something tells me they're probably gonna bring some charges.
You kind of have to.
Yeah, misuse of government property and generally being dumb. Not everyone can be Breaking Bad.
No one can be Breaking Bad, but Breaking Bad.
So, someone that, or rather, a thing that that tried to be Breaking Bad in a very positive way was something I saw this last weekend. So we're moving sort of into spoiler territory. This is for a show that I saw. I actually saw the final show that they did. They may bring it back, but what we went to go see was Lo Speziale, which is Italian for, I believe, The Specialist, I think. It's an opera by Haydn, whom I thought was German, but I don't know. It's in Italian. Anyway, it's an opera that has what's affectionately known as a pants roll, or sometimes a trousers roll. And what that means is at least one of the parts is a male part, but it's played by a woman because the range of the notes is way too high for a man to sing, which is, I guess, high comedy in like 1700s Italy, which is what it was played for in the show I saw. It was at the Dragon Theater in Redwood City. They're doing kind of small operas and operettas to revitalize theater in Redwood City. And the way they did that for this one was they adapted the opera for the stage in the style of Breaking Bad. So the base plot of the opera is that there's a pharmacist, or rather a guy who owns a pharmacy, and an apothecary really, and he would in Europe at the time there were the plagues coming through, so he is going to get rich by making all of the drugs to cure all of the plagues, and there's a like a love quadrangle that happens in the process of this, and there are mistaken identities and disguises, and there it's, you know, it's kind of silly and funny. And so when they adapted it, they made the guy in charge be kind of like Walter White, the guy who is cutting all of the drugs and doing all of the work, to be like Jesse Pinkman. His love interest is kind of like Jane, and the other like kind of bigwig finance guy they made kind of like Saul Goodman for someone to look. And so they dressed up the theater to look like kind of a garage meth lab in a garage kind of look, and they adapted the lyrics somewhat, or rather I think they had the original lyrics, but they messed with the super titles to kind of fit the theme a little bit more. Like, I'm pretty sure they never said science bitch in Haydn's original opera, but it worked really well.
You don't know that.
Yeah, I don't know Italian. I don't. but they did have a few really hilarious things. I thought it was great. I think it. I mean, it got us to go see an opera. It's something that I don't usually do. There are a few operas that I've seen, mostly because I know a couple people that sing opera, and so I will go see one or two of those. But generally, it's not a thing that I go see, just because it's kind of, I'm not sure what the word is. It can, I had a lot of experience with the Met Opera shows in college, because they simulcast them at the radio station there, and it was always a thing that sounded very kind of hoity-toity. So to see it live is you know, it's a dress-up affair, and you have to kind of you know, be very serious about it. But operas aren't necessarily serious. They're about, they can be about serious things, so they can be about funny things. And I think this was a nice way to put more of a light opera kind of out in the world, and kind of changing the theme to be more interesting, to make a draw, is not bad. I think it probably worked really well. I mean, they have a lot of range to do with staging, even if you are, you know, true to the theme or whatever that is. But I think doing it in kind of a style like this, mashing up some of the pop culture into it, infuses it a little bit more in a way that makes it really interesting. I think it's a thing. Unfortunately, I did see the last performance, so hopefully it comes back.
Oh, great. I'll make sure to see it. Oh, wait.
Well, we'll link the theater and the theater company. I know that they're looking for more people, more people to work on operas. So hopefully more are coming in from that. So that'll be fun. So moving from one spoiler filled thing to another, I saw Terminator Genesis this last weekend.
I saw it a while ago. Yeah.
It was kind of underwhelming. I mean, there's a lot of action. There's a lot of stuff that goes on. I think they did a really good job of kind of turning a blind eye to the third and fourth kind of installments of the movie series.
I was fine with that.
Yeah, really. I mean, Terminator was good. Terminator 2 was really good. Terminator 3 was really bad. And Terminator Salvation was just an abomination. But Terminator Genesis, I think it was interesting in that, you know, they really tried to, at least at the beginning, kind of stick to the mythology of the first movie anyway. Not really any of the other movies, which is fine. But it borrowed like the good stuff from Terminator 2. That is the liquid metal Terminator, and
not played by Robert Patrick.
Yeah, the guy next to me was like, "It's Asian Robert Patrick."
But it was a fun movie. You don't want to think about it too much.
Right.
It really felt like Jurassic World to me. There are two movies that are pretty good that really bank on nostalgia.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, there was some stuff definitely from the first Terminator that they kind of brought forward that is fine, and I think works if you're a fan of the first two movies, or at least the first one, but definitely the first and the second one. But it still felt just kind of like this is not going to stand on its own, and it's also really, really plastic.
Yeah, it doesn't really breathe. But I will say, J.K. Simmons almost steals the movie.
Yeah.
As the alcoholic cop.
Yeah, it was just fine. I didn't care for whoever they got to play Kyle Reese.
Jai Courtney.
Never felt super connected. And then oh shoot. I can't remember her name.
Amelia Clark.
Yeah, she was good, but it was just like fine. You know, not blow your socks off. I might watch it again, but I think I'd rather just watch T2 again.
Yeah, I actually watched them in the same day. They're very different movies.
Yeah.
You know, this was directed by Alan Taylor, who's worked on Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. and also did the last Thor movie.
Oh, okay.
So he's competent, but not blown away.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, he's working with a property that I think has a kind of weird pedigree. And it also had time travel, which is really, really hard to do.
I think
every time that they've done a Terminator movie, they've changed up how time travel works and how the rules are. And they also had a really awful like exposition sequence with Arnold Schwarzenegger's Terminator, like explaining the time split.
Yeah. Well, I think they also shot themselves in the foot, and I know it wasn't the director or anybody, it was the marketing department, but revealing that John Connor's the bad guy in the trailer sucked so much out of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been a great twist if they didn't tell you it was going to happen in the trailer. Like, that would have made this movie way better. Just going into it cold.
Yeah, there were that was a good kind of reversal in the movie.
And this is supposed to be a first movie in a new trilogy, but it's not done very well.
No.
And so now there's some concern that it might not happen, which bums me out because Matt Smith is barely in this movie, and I want more Matt Smith in pretty much everything.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good. It was good. I'm not I think the only reason to see it in a theater is if you can find a theater that's very loud, because that's fun.
Computer generated version of Arnold as a younger Terminator. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty well done.
Yeah. Yeah, they even gave him the right kind of 80s hairstyle.
Yeah.
Especially when they show the one, well, I mean, it was supposed to be like the 70s, but you know, with the big black sunglasses. Mm-hmm. So, that was good. I think they can do a lot with it. They leave enough kind of gaps that they were setting up something else, and then there's a very obvious like after the credits moment, which is I think unnecessary, but you know, I guess they're trying to go the Marvel route there and give people something to think about, but
I just realized they stole from Futurama making this movie. Because whole concept of we're going to travel through time, but we're going to leave the robot behind to take the long road. They did that to Bender when they traveled back to the 40s.
Yeah. Well, you know, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
And this movie imitated itself in its own franchise, so I don't know what that means.
Well, if anyone wants to imitate us and do another podcast with two friends talking about things that aren't things, and they want to use that that notathing.com kind of website, that's not a thing. Stick to the genuine article. The Not a Thing podcast, episode 150, is good to go. Hope you enjoyed it.
Till next time, Alan.